Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. It is early Saturday morning at this point. It is past midnight. We just wrapped up day two of the NFL draft here at the Browns facility in Berea. Dan Lobby with Mary Kay Cabot and Ashley Bastock. We're going to recap what happened here on day two real quickly. We'll bring you another pod again when the draft is over on Saturday night, and then we'll kind of recap things next week. But just real quick here off of day two, to give you an instant reaction, let's start with the first pick the Browns made, Mary Kay. They stayed at 54. They didn't trade up. They didn't trade back. They just kind of waited and let things come their way. But I do think it was interesting that Glenn Cook, the assistant GM, did tell us they started to get calls pretty early, a while before that pick. And they decided to stay there and take Michael Hall. And when we heard from Andrew Berry afterwards, he really sounded like Michael Hall was a guy that he really wanted. He seemed excited to get him. So they take the Ohio State kid, grew up in Streetsboro, went to Benedictine in Streetsboro High School. So he's staying home.
You know, I think they must have been kind of surprised that Michael Hall was available there. According to Dane Brugler, he was the number five defensive tackle in this draft, and he was not the fifth one picked. There were several, I think, that went ahead of him. I don't think he was number five out of the defensive tackles. So I really do think that they were pleasantly surprised that Michael Hall was falling to them basically at number 54. So that's why they decided, let's not trade out of this pick. Let's stick with it. Because originally, I really firmly believed that they wanted to try to trade down and pick up a fourth-round pick, get back in that fourth round. The draft starts to tail off midway through the fourth. I think they wanted to try to get up into the first half of the fourth round and see what they could do. But when they saw that they could acquire Michael Hall and get that interior push, I think they just stayed patient and let it come to them.
Yeah, so when you look at the second round, there was this run on tackles here. So Byron Murphy went in round one. Then round two, you've got Ruke Aroro, I think that's how you say the name, Jerzon Newton, Tavondre Sweat, Braden Fisk, Mason Smith, Chris Jenkins. Those were all in the first 17 picks of the second round. And then at the 22nd pick of the second round, number 54 overall, that's when Michael Hall Jr. goes to the Browns. So, Ashley, there was this kind of run on tackles there. And I guess I wish I could know what was going on in that war room as all these tackles are coming off the board, especially if Hall is a guy that the Browns really, really wanted.
Yeah, I wondered that too, and how much that ultimately played a part in them deciding to stay put. I mean, we knew this was a deep draft class for defensive linemen. It was particularly a deep year for defensive tackles. And I think continuously we saw things about guys like Mason Smith, Chris Jenkins, Michael Hall being poised to kind of be hanging around in the 50s there. I personally was surprised Mason Smith went in the 40s. I was surprised he went before Chris Jenkins or Michael Hall, just because there's an injury history there. He missed all of the 2022 season with an ACL tear. He's, of course, got size that those two other guys don't. But I think if you really had your heart set on one of those round two D tackles, you kind of had to stay put where the Browns were and hope at least one of them fell to you, because for a while there, when that run started, I'm like, is Michael Hall Jr. even going to be available at this point? So I definitely think they were smart just to stay put, but I, like Mary Kay, wondered, are they going to try to make a move to get back into that fourth round? Because now we come in on Saturday, and as things stand, or very early Saturday morning, they're not picking until 156. I mean, that's going to be a long wait for them now.
Yeah, they just had pick 100 to end the night. So there's going to be 55 picks before the Browns go on the clock as of right now. So we'll see if that changes. But when you look at Michael Hall, Mary Kay, of course, last year the Browns took a defensive tackle on day two in Siaki Ika. You know, they certainly talked him up as far as, you know, wanting to turn him into a guy that could get after the quarterback. He didn't really get on the field much last year. He's still around. We'll see how that room shakes out and kind of what his future looks like. But for Michael Hall, it really was, to hear them all talk about it, it was about pressure and creating pressure. And that defensive tackle position, you start looking at those salaries, especially over the last 2 years, that tells you what people think of that position, especially when you have a guy that can get after the quarterback. And in Jim Schwartz's scheme, the more guys across that line that can get after the quarterback, the better. And that's really what they valued here in Michael Hall.
Yeah, I mean, I actually thought that the Browns would go after a big name defensive tackle in free agency, because it is the spot. It is the it position right now. Everyone wants that inside pressure up the middle. Get in the quarterback's face if you can, or get him out of the pocket, off to the sides, and in somebody else's face. But when that didn't happen, it really did open the door for them to get a defensive tackle. And again, not just any defensive tackle. The emphasis is on pass-rushing defensive tackle. Everyone's looking for the Chris Jones of the world, the Christian Wilkins of the world. So you know, they got their guy. And it is kind of strange to see that they went with Siaki Ika last year, and he wasn't able to do anything. I think he had 100 snaps last year, and he really wasn't able to make that impact. And remember, he was the Ferrari last year. We were, at this time last year, talking him up like crazy, and Jim Schwartz was so excited about him. And here they are 1 year later, kind of revisiting the whole situation with another defensive tackle, but one that I think will be in the starting lineup on day one.
Yeah, so as we talk about him on the field, let's take a minute here and let our draft expert, Tim Bielik, tell you a little more about what Michael Hall can do on the field.
Michael Hall Jr. is one of the best pass rushing defensive tackles in this draft, and the Browns needed a pass rusher on the interior. That's exactly what Michael Hall Jr. is. He's disruptive. He's explosive. Six sacks, 9.5 tackles for loss in his last two seasons at Ohio State. He's added weight during the offseason process. Now he weighs 299 pounds as of his pro day. He's going to need to work on his run defense, but I've said before, defensive tackle for me is kind of a pseudo redshirt position. So with the veterans the Browns have at defensive tackle, I think they can afford to be a little patient with Michael Hall and let him develop, maybe turn him loose on third down. But it's a good pick by Andrew Berry. He goes for another 20-year-old player, Michael Hall Jr., and he goes for another Buckeye.
All right, thanks, Tim. So Ashley, again, pressure, right? That's what Catherine Raich talked about, the assistant GM. That's what Andrew Berry talked about. They want pressure, and we're seeing, you know, something that Catherine pointed out was this idea of you're getting a high-priced guy, right, or a high-priced position at a cost-controlled second-round deal. So if this works out, if he's able to do what they believe he can do, you're getting really great value at that defensive tackle position.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about him is obviously the sack numbers are not necessarily there on when you're just looking at the box scores, right? He had 4.5 sacks in 2022, but only 1.5 in 2023, and that's when he started 7 games for Ohio State. So the numbers I think that have popped out are things like his pass rush win rate, which I don't have the percentage in front of me, but
it was like 18.3.
Yeah. I should have just asked Mary Kay.
I got it first.
You did.
Good job.
That deserves a victory
right.
lap. But that was second in all of the FBS, according to Dane Brugler. So I think that's one thing. I think also his length. He has an arms measured in at 33 and a half inches, his wingspan 81 and one-eighth inches. He has that reach. So I think those are intriguing things. I think the fact that he's only 20 years old, and either Glenn Cook or Catherine Raich, when they were up there, mentioned he has like two really good moves in his tool basket, so to speak. I'm mixing metaphors there, that maybe he can add a third even as a rookie, that would be a really great start. I think the fact that he's only 20 years old is huge in all of this, too. He turns 21 in June. He's young. We know these guys love to draft players who are super young and still showed effectiveness playing for big-time schools. So all those things, I think, working in his favor in terms of his pass rush ceiling potential.
You also said tool basket.
Tool basket. Listen, it is. What time is it? It's
late.
1 a.m.
It's
Dan,
late.
Do you have a tool basket?
I'm going to get one. It's like a little picnic basket with a hammer and a saw.
Mary Kay and I, that either of us have any tools?
We don't have tools. We don't thrift.
We
don't hike. And we don't have a tool basket.
We don't have tool baskets or tool boxes, I think they are. Listen, we're good at certain things, and it's talking about pass rush win rate at 1 a.m.
There you go.
Fair enough.
It's not dissecting where people keep tools.
Mary Kate,
we can talk three technique all day long, Daniel.
I guess so. Ashley went through all those traits, and this was one of those moments where, as I was after they made the pick, and I kind of looked at it, and I'm like, of course they picked this guy because he checks all these boxes: age, pass rush win rate, all of this stuff, you know, arm length, all of this stuff that the Browns value and love. This is one of those picks that, after the fact, in hindsight, I kind of like wanted to just get a hammer out of my tool basket and knock myself in the head and say, come on, what were you thinking? Of course they were going to take Michael Hall. It all kind of made sense.
I'm sorry. That was just a very funny visual. But I get what you're saying, because it makes so much sense when you hear them talk about it and when you understand what they're trying to do on that defensive line. And they love to build strongly in the trenches. And we're going to get to that when we talk about the number 85 pick as well. But yes, this makes a lot of sense. And also, they really have become Buckeye fans, haven't they? DeJuan Jones last year, Luke Whipler last year. They, of course, have Denzel Ward. They're really taking advantage of the fact that they've got Ohio State right here almost in their backyard. They've got connections. They've got Mike Vrabel in the building now. And I'm sure he put his two cents in. And it's just a happy OHIO moment.
Well, with that said, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to talk about that player that they picked at 85 who most definitely did not go to Ohio State, actually went to their rival. We'll get to that.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Back on the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. So at number 85, the Browns took Zach Zinter out of Michigan. Say that five times fast. Zach Zinter. Here's what Tim Bielek had to say about Zach.
Zinter has started 42 games for the Wolverines at right guard over four seasons and was such a huge part of why that Michigan offensive line was so dominant for the last three seasons. Very intelligent player. Plays with a lot of power, although he could stand at a little weight of just about 309 pounds. Good length for a guard. Could stand to be a little better with his movement. He did break his tibia and fibula in the game against Ohio State, although Andrew Berry did say after taking Zinter that he should be ready to go for this season. I've long felt the Browns needed to go for guard depth behind Joel Bitonio and Wyatt Teller as they get older. They won't need Zinter that much this season. He can develop behind the scenes. This maybe is a little early for him, for me, especially with some of the receivers that were still available. But you can't argue with depth for the offensive line, especially adding a new face for the interior in Zach Zinter.
Okay, so Tim mentioned the injury, and Mary Kay, there is a connection here, a very weird connection. And I talked about this in the video we did. It was kind of interesting to see it dawn on everyone. You know, we were sitting there watching video, trying to figure it out in the media room that, wait a second, Zach Zinter suffered what was it, a broken tibia and fibula against Ohio State, ended his season, ended his Michigan career. And the player that got pushed into him was the player the Browns drafted earlier, Michael Hall. So just a strange, unfortunate connection between the two.
It's like something that you would make a movie out of, or something that you would make some kind of a television show out of, right? It's so bizarre that this happened. It's really, really weird. And we were in there, you know, doing this Zapruder film, basically.
It was.
Right? I mean, we were trying to figure this all out, and it's just such a weird coincidence. And now they are teammates. And in my story about it, I said, I mean, this is an Ohio State-Michigan story for the ages, right? I mean, for this to happen to Zintner and now be teammates with Michael Hall is just very, very bizarre. And really one of the more interesting stories of the evening. So we'll have to see how this goes. But yeah, it was, as you mentioned, Dan, it was a complete accident. I mean, he got absolutely just shoved into, inadvertently, of course. Nobody was trying to hurt anybody, but he just got shoved into that leg. It was such a gruesome injury. Fox Sports refused to show the replay. He got carted off. He missed the next three games, including Michigan's national championship victory. But here they are, now teammates, and boy, do they have a story to tell.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, look, injuries happen. Guys get hurt all the time, especially in the trenches. And in practices, guys get hurt, right? Like teammates hurt each other. It happens in football. But it's still just, Ashley, there's something about this situation that is just so bizarre. I don't even necessarily know how to describe it. It's just weird. Like, no one could have said, okay, the Browns are going to take Zach Zinter, who suffered a gruesome injury, but they're also going to take the player who, I don't want to say he was responsible for the injury, because that's not fair to him.
But he's
the one that actually sort of inadvertently caused the injury when he got pushed into the leg. So just strange.
Yeah, it's almost like an O. Henry story, yeah. Like Gift of the Magi, just some wild story with a weird, unexpected twist. And I mean, I have a feeling that this is going to kind of blow up overnight, because the key to remember here, something Mary Kay said, they didn't even replay this injury. There's not video of it, clear video of it readily available, because it was pretty bad. So when she says we were sitting around doing this Zapruder film, it's because it's very quick, very blurry, and we're trying to figure out who the Ohio State lineman is that wound up getting tossed into his leg by one of his teammates. I mean, it just is a total freak accident. But I do think from everything we know about the injury, and it's still early here, that it was, as Zach Zinter put it, a best case, worst case scenario. It's obviously unfortunate it ended his college career. It's unfortunate that he had to suffer this injury, but he didn't have any ligament damage in his ankle or knee. He was off crutches somehow by the championship week for Michigan. And it sounds like he's progressing nice. Andrew Berry, of course, didn't say much tonight about when he might be ready and how much he might be able to participate. All those are still question marks. But I think he's coming in with a great attitude. And that was one of his hallmarks as a player on that offensive line, too. He was a captain and they really rallied around him. So interesting dynamic coming here.
Yeah, the key point of all of it is that fact that he's going to be ready to go. Like, it's not going to be something that's going to keep him out for, you know, the start of the season. Or it even sounded like they were optimistic he could go maybe in the spring. So it seems good there. Now, the leap here is, okay, you took a guard, so this guy's probably a replacement for one of your two guards. I can see them thinking like that, and I'm sure they are thinking about the future with this move. But it's hard to kind of write a guy, a third rounder in Penn, as your starting guard for 10 years once one of these two guards that you have goes. But Joel Bitonio's 33, and I think that's kind of where you start here. This is the first year where we saw his body, I don't want to say start to break down, but he suffered some injuries this year. He missed snaps, which is something Joel Bitonio doesn't do. And he was asked about it at the end of the season, and he obviously said he was going to come back, but he did. It sounded like it was something like maybe retirement could be on the horizon, I guess, the way he sort of answered the question. He didn't like laugh it off and say, oh, yeah, of course, I'm going to play for the next 10 years. So the end is near for Joel. None of us want to see it happen soon, but the Browns do have to plan for the future.
They really do. And this is a regime that does a really nice job of that. That's why they go get those 20-year-old guys like Michael Hall still is right now. Because they know they have to keep cycling these guys through. And when you do have your all-pro guard who is heading into his 11th season. You never know when he's going to say, okay, I'm done. And if he even thought about it after this season, then you know he's going to think about it again after next season. And he did think about it. He didn't definitively say, oh, absolutely, 100%, I'm raring to go again, you know? So you have to really map that out and try to figure out what your game plan is going to be. And if it all works out, Zinter could be the heir apparent to one of those guys, to Joel Bitonio. In a perfect world, that's what you would hope would happen. Joel was a second round pick, and you could just do a lot worse than finding your next Joel Bitonio in the second round.
Ashley, when you, I mean, again, no one's ready to push Joel out the door here, but I do think this is going to start to become a year-to-year proposition with him, especially if he has another year where he gets hurt. And also, on the other side, Wyatt Teller, that is an expensive contract. And it just feels like there's going to be an inflection point at these with one of these two guards, maybe in the next offseason or two.
Yeah, I also think it's important to point out just the nature of the position. And I always, and I'm sure a lot of Browns fans, always think of like Joe Thomas, right? Sometimes with linemen, it can be one injury and you don't see it coming. There is no plan for it, but it's ultimately what knocked Joe Thomas out. That could happen to anybody as they get older and have to play on the offensive line. You see it all the time. So I think that's also something where it's good to get ahead of it before those plans even become more definitive and a player says, hey, it's time for me to step away. A lot of guys don't get that luxury. And, you know, of course, with a guy like Joel Bitonio, who has been nothing but amazing, who I think we all think is potentially on that Hall of Fame path, even though it's really hard for guards to get into that, you want him to go out on his own terms. But sometimes that's not the reality. And I do think just by nature of him getting older, the more years he spends here, this is definitely going to be, unfortunately, kind of a perennial conversation. And it's good that you're adding depth in before that really, truly becomes the case.
Yeah. And the other part of it, too, Mary Kay, is like, again, he's going to be 33. He's got young kids. He's made a bunch of money. Like at some point, look, he came up under Joe Thomas, right? And for Joe, I know it was important for him to, all of these guys, it's important for them to be able to pick up their kids and play with their kids and, you know, be human beings after they're done with football. So all of that has to be entering Joel's mind at this point.
And he also, I'm sure, thinks about possibly Hall of Fame chances, and he's kind of on that trajectory. And if he keeps going for a while and keeps making Pro Bowls and All Pros, you can get yourself into that conversation, and maybe that comes into play as well. Maybe not, but it does seem like he's on the back nine. He knows it, and now they have maybe a succession plan.
Well, Joel, we want you to stick around.
We're not pushing you out.
You win our good guy every year for a reason. So we're not trying to push you out the door. And I don't think the Browns are either. But
no.
It would be great if Zach Zinter could be kind of that next in line that would make that transition. Because we know what happened at left tackle when Joe Thomas suddenly retired. It was a long slog to get to Jedrick Wills. And even that is still, you know, we'll see kind of how that plays out. But at least they got some stability there. We're not going to turn this into a Jed Wills podcast. That is day two of the NFL draft. We will be back on Saturday to recap. It's day three. Make sure you're subscribed to Orange and Brown Talk on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Find us on Instagram. Search Orange and Brown Talk. YouTube, Cleveland Browns on Cleveland.com. We got some shorts up there that you can check out. And also become a Football Insider subscriber. Cleveland.com/Browns. The blue banner at the top of the page. For Mary Kay and Ashley, I'm Dan. Thanks for listening, everybody.